Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Bear Tooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
David Noble here. We are live on New Year's Eve, December 31st. I wouldn't say we had a technical issue here this morning during the 6 o'clock hour. I'd say more of a mechanical issue, but we are live here. We've got a special guest here joining us, Jim Brown, obviously the president of the currently of the PSC, James Brown recently elected as the next auditor from the state of Montana. Jim, thanks so much for joining us. Oh, I can't hear him coming through. Oh, you know what?
He faded.
All right, now I got you. Now you're on the air, Jim. Sorry. New studio thing for me here. Sorry about that.
No worries. Technical difficulties to end the new year and ring the new year in. Thanks for having me on the show this morning.
Yeah, thanks so much. So I guess you got to be gearing up to take office as auditor, right? When does that happen?
Yeah, it does. Thanks. Yeah, this is an interesting time for me professionally. I'm sitting in my empty PSC office here in Helena, and we'll be moving into my new auditor role January 6th. 2025, the governor has kindly arranged for all of the constitutional officers, all the statewide officers, if you will, including the auditor, to be sworn at the same time at 10:30 on January 6th. So that's when I'll assume my new position.
Very cool. And are you going to have like an inauguration party or anything like that?
Oh, I don't plan to. I know the attorney general sent out some invites for his inauguration party, which will take place on January 11th. And then I believe the governor is planning to do an event on January 14th.
All right, so I'll see you there on the 11th then, I assume, right?
Oh, yeah, I'll be there.
So do you have, I don't know what it's like to be state auditor. I don't know if it's like being president where you can, like, line up a bunch of executive orders to issue on day one. Is there anything like that?
Yeah, interestingly enough, the auditor's office does have the power to issue what are called agency opinions, which, as you know from being an attorney, David, that have the same force and effect as a law would have. It's similar to what we know of as an AG's opinion. And so we can issue opinions on matters that are binding as to enforcement and regulation by the agency. I think the natural question that you're going to ask me next is, do I have anything in mind to issue right away? I do not.
I mean, I guess you're not taking over from a Democrat, so that kind of makes sense.
No. As I'm sure your listeners know, Troy Downing is the current state auditor until January 3rd when he gets sworn in as a member of Congress, which is pretty interesting, by the way, if you think of the timing. I told you I get sworn into auditor as the 6th, and he gets sworn into Congress as the 3rd. So there will be a two-day period where there won't be an acting state auditor in Montana. But Troy has done a great job of being the state auditor for the last 4 years in Montana. And so I'm picking up an agency that's very well run, and Troy has done a good job.
Hey, fantastic. Jim, great news here. We got the door unlocked to Aaron's studio. So I'm going to put you on hold here, Jim. And we're going to take a break. We'll be right back here live on December 31st with David Noble.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. As skies stay cloudy into the day today, we'll see some snow showers around, especially early on, and some breaks of sun in some areas later today as well. High temperature readings ranging right around 30. For tonight, partly to mostly cloudy skies, lows from 10 to 15 degrees. And then on Wednesday, we'll see a chance for snow showers, otherwise staying rather cloudy. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Hey, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I'll tell you what, if you're going to be traveling this holiday season, whether it's on a plane, train, or an automobile, download the Montana Talks app. Not only can you listen live through the Montana Talks app, you'll see some of the web content, some of the news and commentary pieces that we share. But if you're traveling, you're in and out of coverage, you're sleeping in, you can download all 4 hours of Montana Talks. And there's going to be some great content. David Noble, Scott Aspenlider, and more. Download the Montana Talks app on your phone.
Fox Rocks. I'm Michelle Polino. The building that housed the Morrison Hotel, featured on the iconic cover of the Doors 1970 album of the same name, suffered significant damages after a fire tore through the downtown Los Angeles building. No one was injured in the blaze, but the fire caused the roof to collapse. According to the L.A. Fire Department, there were some homeless people living in the mostly vacant building. Morrison Hotel, the band's fifth studio album, featured the hit songs Peace Frog, Waiting for the Sun, and Roadhouse Blues. Megadeth have begun work on album number 17. Singer and guitarist Dave Mustaine says on X, formerly Twitter, that he hopes his bandmates will join him in the studio shortly after the new year. And Public Enemy's Flavor Flav, well known for his clock pendant, told Rolling Stone that he might request a built-in clock for his coffin when he passes. When asked about what should be written on his tombstone, he joked, "It's about time." That's Fox Rocks on Fox News.
This is where Montana talks.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint here live on Montana Talks, December 31st. Came in this morning and tried to get into Aaron's studio here, and the door was locked. So we just decided to play some of those best of clips during that 6 o'clock hour. Luckily, we got somebody here with the key. I'm in Aaron's studio now. Everything's okay. We're live. We're talking to Montana State Auditor-elect James Brown. State Auditor-elect James Brown, I've got some questions for you about kind of, you know, how you're leaving the PSC, how you think the PSC is going to do once you're gone, plans for you with the state auditor going forward, political questions of the day, but kind of wanted to give you a chance to, I guess, let the people of Montana kind of know what's on your mind as you prepare to take office.
Yeah, I think you stated it right there. I'm leaving the PSC in a roar, if you will. We've got a lot of weighty matters that the agency has been dealing with since Election Day 2024, not the least of which is that the agency's acted on two different rate increases by our two biggest regulated energy providers in Montana. One would be Montana Dakota Utilities there on the eastern side of the state. Certainly your listeners may have be aware that we at the PSC rejected a interim rate increase proposed by MDU of about 10.25% going into the winter months here. And we have the ability as commissioners to deny interim rate increases as they're discretionary. So we, my colleagues and I felt that, you know, with exploding costs for Montana families on everything from health care to food to insurance, you know, the gasoline, that this wasn't the time to be imposing a rate increase. And then we also, interestingly, approved a rate decrease for Northwestern Energy's customers. On November 26th, we approved an interim rate decrease of 72.4% for Northwestern Energy's residential electric customers. So a few holiday gifts for the ratepayers of Montana in that regard. And then the other thing is that, as you know, David, the PSC is involved in some pretty weighty litigation. Certainly, we are paying attention to that held decision that was issued by the Montana Supreme Court earlier this month that basically told the DEQ that it had to take into account global warming or climate change as part of its decision-making and issuing permits. Fortunately, the PSC was named as a defendant. I was personally named as a defendant in that litigation early on, but we got ourselves at the PSC extracted from that litigation because we do not apply as an agency the Montana Environmental Policy Act. But I can tell you that the environmental groups are trying to get litigation started against us at the PSC now as a result of this held case, saying that we have an obligation under the Montana Constitution to take into account global warming as well.
That's I find that holding of that held case just so meaningless. It's like, okay, so the holding, as I understand it, is basically the state can no longer enforce a statute that was already repealed, saying that we're not going to take into account man-made global warming when we make certain decisions at the state. I'm just sitting there thinking, okay, number one, the thing's already been repealed. How irrelevant. Number two, okay, fine, we'll take it into account. I considered it, and I rejected it. Move on. I mean, how meaningless is that decision? And I know it's not necessarily the most relevant to what your position was. I was going to kind of ask you a funny question, which is, hey, what can the state auditor do to rein in the judiciary?
That is a funny question. Not much, I would say.
Right.
You certainly know, David, that I ran for Montana Supreme Court 2 years ago. I did not win my race for the Supreme Court, but I feel like it was a very successful campaign because I felt like I was the first candidate to run for Supreme Court to ever sort of blow the whistle on what was happening with the Montana judiciary and letting people know that our Montana Supreme Court had become essentially a second legislative body in the state of Montana and was violating the Montana Constitution by exercising powers of a separate branch. And I really believe that my discussions with the people of Montana to that effect has resulted in Corey Swanson being elected to the Chief Justice of the state of Montana and heightened focused by the legislature on what the Supreme Court is doing, and that's a really positive thing for the people of Montana.
I think that's a really positive thing as well. And frankly, you know, as a licensed attorney, and we are both licensed attorneys, I actually feel an obligation to my fellow citizens of Montana as a licensed attorney to do what I can as a licensed attorney to try to improve the judiciary. And you know, they were talking a lot about the judicial reform the other day with Scott Aspenlighter and Jake Eaton, which I thought was a fantastic conversation. They were talking about all the bills and, you know, partisan judicial races and all this stuff. And frankly, from my perspective, we just need better people and better candidates to run for these for judge and justice. And if you have that, of course, you know, then that would fix all the issues. You don't need all of the legislative reform if you just had good judges and justices. Of course, you know, how many of the attorneys out there, you know, are real originalists, real textualists, really believe in a truly impartial and independent judiciary? Not that many, unfortunately. I guess I just took up the rest of the segment there. State Auditor-elect James Brown joining us here live on December 31st, New Year's Eve, 2024. We got a quick news, weather, and commercial. Obscene profit timeout coming up here, and then we're going to come back. By the way, also, John Jackson's going to be in studio, 8 to 10. You're not going to want that to miss that. Hey, if you got a question for James Brown, call in 406-294-0970. Jim does take questions.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Very few of us took economics classes. Perhaps even fewer remember what was said. But we all have a stake in the economy, especially the fight against inflation. And what's been going on in that fight lately isn't exactly how they draw it up on the blackboard. Putting the brakes on the economy when it's running hot is definitely part of the script, of course. That's just what the Fed did when inflation spiked up. Perhaps a bit late, yes. But when it got going, it definitely turned a crank. At the beginning of 24, the Fed said the economy would grow by 1.4% and that the so-called core rate of inflation would slow to 2.4%. And it said it would lower rates three times. So we get to the end of the year and growth looks like it'll come in at 2.8% and inflation up to 2.8% as well. So why did they lower interest rates again? With strong growth and inflation still above target, it doesn't make sense. The Fed is clearly not following the rules and we ought to know why. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
This is House Call for Health. It's New Year's Eve, one last day of 2024, and just about time to ring in the new year. For many, that means it's party time. But with that comes the increased chance of people drinking and driving. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says alcohol reduces the function of the brain and leads to impaired thinking, reasoning, and muscle coordination. but even small amounts of alcohol can affect driving ability. Consequences of drinking and driving can lead to misdemeanors and felony offenses, losing your license, fines, even jail time. NHTSA suggests to plan a safe ride home before the start of the party. Don't let someone you know who's drinking get behind the wheel. Call a taxi or rideshare. Always wear your seatbelt. And if you see someone driving on the road you think is impaired, call local law enforcement. That could save a life. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
Providing. This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
U.S. agriculture faces potential disruption to red meat exports due to stalled labor talks between dock workers and shippers at East and Gulf Coast ports. Negotiations broke down in November over automation issues, with temporary contract extensions set to expire January 15th. The U.S. Meat Export Federation warns the uncertainty is already affecting exports, with added surcharges and efforts to reroute ships. These ports handle 45% of U.S. pork and 30% of U.S. beef exports.
Join the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. NCBA is the oldest and largest national cattle industry organization working to defend your interests in Washington, D.C. And there are big benefits to being a member. You'll get news you can use in the National Cattlemen, email updates in the NCBA Beef Bulletin, plus big discounts only for NCBA members. Join by calling 866-233-3872 or online at ncba.org.
The U.S. is on pace to surpass 5 billion gallons of biodiesel and renewable diesel consumption for the first time. That caps a 2024 that saw increased efforts from states to drive adoption, updates to technical standards, and growth in soybean crush capacity and growing public support for clean transportation fuel. I'm Lane Nordlund.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint, and we are talking to State Auditor-elect James Brown. James, I was talking there right before the break there, kind of just about the course, and we don't need to spend a ton of time on that, but it is the case, isn't it, that the State Auditor does actually litigate. And so the state auditor's position on the court certainly would be relevant, considering how much litigation the state auditor is involved with, especially on enforcement of securities laws and things like that, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right in that regard. It's pretty interesting, the auditor's office and its mission. So the auditor's office is considered a criminal justice agency because we prosecute bad actors, not only, as you were mentioning, in the securities area, but also in the health and insurance field. And so most of the legal work that comes out of that office, aside from doing oversight over health insurance products in Montana, is criminal work. You know, I'm been reviewing, as you can imagine, the staff over at the auditor's office as I do the transition. I've been pretty pleased with the legal team that the current auditor, Troy Downing, has put together. They've done a lot of really good work on behalf of the citizens of Montana. You probably saw from the headlines in the newspapers that the auditor's office did about a $5 million settlement with State Farm for some of their denial practices on coverage. So a lot of good work can be done out of that agency, and that's what I intend to do.
Yeah. So, how many lawyers work for the auditor's office, and how many staff entirely? And the only reason I ask is Jake Eaton had mentioned that the attorney general's office only has like 20 lawyers, but they were able to accomplish, you know, a significant amount of work there in the AG's office the last 4 years, just in terms of filing lawsuits to protect the people of Montana against the violations of the Constitution by the Biden administration. But can you give us a sense about the size of the number of lawyers there and the number of staff, or do you know off the top of your head?
Oh, yeah, I know. So it's interesting because, as your listeners know, I'm currently the president of the Public Service Commission. So at the PSC, we have 33 staff and four attorneys, and that's almost double at the auditor's office. I'm authorized. The agency is authorized for 72 staff and about 8 attorneys. We're down a couple attorneys right now. In fact, interestingly enough, we just lost an attorney to Broadwater County because he'll be taking over for Corey Swanson, who's the current Broadwater County attorney, but he just got elected, as you know, to the Chief Justice. But it's interesting that you mentioned the reference to the AG's office, because we at the auditor's office will work very closely with Attorney General Knutson and his staff on a lot of these constitutional issues, as you mentioned. One of the really great things that A.G. Knutson, I think, has brought to the table as Montana Attorney General is he's been very aggressive in defending Montana's state's rights and, as you mentioned, fighting off some of these woke and crazy policies from the Biden administration. And as the auditor, you know, we'll be able to join in with the A.G. in fighting off some of these crazy national policies that try to implement environmental and social governance in insurance products and that sort of thing, which you know, ultimately the impact of that is to raise rates for Montana's policyholders.
Right. I've got a question for this. I was going to ask you kind of a funny question, which is, Mr. Brown, is Bitcoin a security? But I don't know if that's an appropriate question. I will say, though, that with the Trump administration coming in, and obviously the Trump administration is very pro-crypto, it sounds like obviously crypto and Bitcoin have kind of skyrocketed. I know that the state auditor's office has dealt with crypto and Bitcoin issues in the past, and I don't know if it's a security or not. I do know that the state auditor's office has filed prosecutions against folks here in Montana for various alleged crimes related to crypto stuff. I don't know if you've got any – have you thought about that stuff much, and especially with the Trump administration coming in, and kind of – is there much you can do on that front?
Oh, this is a really timely question. I appreciate your sophistication in asking it. Actually, the question you're asking, right, is Bitcoin a security? Is stablecoin a security? Well, that's interesting, because I think one of the main issues that I'm going to tackle in my next 4 years is that very question. I can tell you that those that are involved in these industries, if you will, would very much like any state in the United States to recognize stablecoin as a security, such that it's regulated and becomes more legitimate, if you will. I can tell you that the consensus among the industry folks is that Bitcoin is not a security. But one of the things I'd like to do really early in my administration is open up a public docket or an investigative docket to have folks comment on whether or not
Hey, Jim, we've got to take Montana a quick to Montana State Auditor-elect James Brown. James, I got a message here on the app. It's from Right On John in Bozeman. He says, I have met James Brown, and I support him all the way. So nice little message there. You said something. We're talking about this issue about, you know, crypto and Bitcoin being securities, and you said something about, you know, your perception is that the industry folks want stablecoin to be determined a security so then it comes with more sort of legitimacy and regulations. I always sort of understood the industry to say that, no, we don't want these things to be considered securities, because then the regulatory compliance becomes almost overwhelming.
Yeah, and that's the difference between Bitcoin and stablecoin. Certainly, my impression talking to folks during this auditor's race is the Bitcoin folks do not want government to regulate that. The stablecoin folks would like to be recognized by a governmental entity and regulated so that stablecoin is treated as a form of monetary payment, if you will, like legitimized. You mentioned the Trump administration. It's been pretty interesting for me to watch Trump during the 2024 election talking about this issue, because, as you know, under the Biden administration, the SEC has been very loath to recognize stablecoin as a valid form of security. My suspicion is that the Trump administration is going to sort of tell the SEC to back off and to let the states, the individual states, determine whether or not stablecoin should be regulated as a security. So I think this issue is going to hit right home to Montana. Right before we went off the break, I was telling you that one of the things that I'd really like to do early in my administration at the auditor's office is to open up a investigatory docket or a public comment docket so that people can comment to our agency to on the issue of whether or not Montana should recognize stablecoin as a security. And if we ultimately do that, if I decide that we should, that's going to be, I would say, national and world news.
Well, I think it is, especially because, you know, you're seeing a whole bunch of stuff out there about the need for a whole bunch of data centers. It used to be Bitcoin mining was the big thing. I think that's kind of gone away just because so many of them have been mined. But the need for sort of a massive amount of electricity and the potential for Montana, frankly, to be sort of a hub and a hotspot could be great for the economy. I guess my sort of one thing I'm confused about a little bit is sort of the interplay between the federal government and the state when it comes to some of those issues. I think the good news is we've got, you know, the Trump administration in there. We've got James Brown coming in. Hopefully there can be a collaboration and there's not going to be a big, you know, fight there. Got to take a break here real quick. We'll come back. If you guys want to send a message in, I'll read it to State Auditor-elect James Brown. Feel free to call in as well. We'll be right back.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
We're live on New Year's Eve 2024, talking to Montana State Auditor-elect James Brown. James, I was going to ask you a question kind of about some of the plans that you have going forward to educate the public and address some of the financial scams and financial frauds that we have going on in the state, especially targeting elderly folks. I think it's a big issue here and something that the state auditor can really make a lot of good progress on. But I guess before you jump into that, I'd ask you sort of what do you think the interplay is between the federal government and the state government when it comes to sort of the crypto, Bitcoin security type of issue? Is that something that, I mean, is the federal government going to make the decision and then it's on and then that's it? Or do you have some role to play on that?
Yeah, that's a really sophisticated question. So we go back to, you know, you and I are trained lawyers and we go back to our constitutional law class, right? And the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution states that the power is not given to the federal government or reserved to the states or the people, right? And so the area of securities has always been regulated by the states. And so the states really are in the position to make a determination as to what is a security. And so, as we were discussing before the break, there's an opportunity for a state such as the state of Montana to make a determination that stablecoin is a security and will be regulated as such. And if, and the moment that a state does that, then you're bringing legitimacy, if you will, to this type of currency.
So it sounds to me like you haven't made a final decision yet. You're going to sort of take public comment on it and go through the process before you make a final decision on that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, I am. And the reason that is because once a state jumps and makes that determination, that is going to have a profound ripple effect all across the country. And as you were discussing as to what the feds do, certainly the federal government, in theory, could recognize stable coin, as legitimate in some matter, which would be binding upon the states. But as we were talking about, under the Biden administration, the SEC has been very loath to make that jump. But, you know, the reality is that we're living in, you know, the 21st century. And so these questions are going to be very profound and have to be dealt with because, if you will, the market is already moving towards that way. You know, the other thing that you brought up right before the jump there was the intersection between sort of my work at the PSC and the auditor's office. I'm sure you saw that earlier this month that Northwestern announced that it was going to be signing a deal to provide power to Atlas Power Group for a planned data center in Butte. And the facility is expected to require some 75 megawatts of energy supply load beginning in 2026. The thing that we've been watching, or I've been watching as a commissioner for the last 4 years in this office, is that the energy demands in Montana are only increasing as our population grows and as our economy grows. And Northwestern Energy has averred for years that they don't have the capacity to meet this new demand. And so it's going to be interesting to see this interplay between these data centers and our ability to meet energy needs in Montana.
Well, I've got a real easy solution. We could just put up a couple of fossil fuel power plants.
We could, but that takes us, I mean, everything's connected, David. That takes us back to the health case decision that we were discussing. You were noting that that case may not be as problematic as some people think, because, as you stated, there was two challenges in that case. One was to a statute, which was basically the state energy policy in Montana, but that has been since repealed, so it doesn't matter. But where that health case does matter is that for the MEPA statute, which is the environmental review statute, that case does come into effect, and the DEQ will have to take now, as a result of this case, into account global warming or climate change. And, of course, who does the permitting for new, quote, fossil fuel facilities in Montana? I call them thermals, not fossil fuel. Well, DEQ does. And so what's going to happen is the court system is going to start to be the battleground for stopping new energy facilities in Montana. It already is, as we saw from the interplay of the Laurel plant, you know, where Northwestern's bringing on a gas fire generation plant in Montana. And then this takes us all the way back to why the importance of the courts in Montana. Who are these judges that are going to hear these cases? And as you stated, it has to be judges that understand judicial restraint and what the actual role of the court is, which is not to be policymakers.
So it really is all connected. That's pretty amazing to draw those connections like that.
Yeah, it is. It's all connected, and that's why you need that's why elections matter, as you were stating, particularly with these judge races, which I truly believe. And I listened to Jake Eaton's show where he was talking about the court system in Montana. I actually sent him a text after that show and told him that was one of the best foreign shows I had ever listened to.
That's what I said. I started out the show yesterday at 6 a.m. I spent the first half of the 6 a.m. hour yesterday just going on and on and on about how amazing basically both of Scott Aspenlighter's shows was. It was, especially with, you know, having Jake Eaton on and then Jennifer Owen and having the U.S. attorney on. And there is just no other place anywhere in Montana, online or offline, where you're going to get that kind of insight and knowledge and analysis of Montana politics that you got there with Scott Aspenlighter's shows. Those were so good.
Yeah, those were amazing, but it's generally true, not to pump up Aaron, you know, because he's taking vacation, but the truth of the matter is that the best source of information in Montana is this show right here, because Aaron covers every issue in depth and provides unbiased information, unlike what you read in the print media or on other digital media. But the fact of the matter is, as we were talking about, it's all connected. It's all connected here. The work of the PSC and what we're trying to do to ensure that there's adequate power for Montana's customers over a 20-year planning horizon, which is part of the mission of the PSC, that's tough to do when we don't know what the court system is going to do in authorizing new forms of generation in Montana. And so the decisions that courts make are important for regulators like me at the Public Service Commission, or when I go over to the auditor's office to be a regulator for insurance, where the courts have made an impact there. As you know, Montana courts have been very unfriendly to the insurance companies in Montana, which has resulted in rising rates for Montana's insurance customers. This isn't a defense of insurance companies, certainly, as we discussed with the State Farm scenario, and they're fine. You know, they do some bad actions, but part of the role of a regulator is to ensure that there's adequate competition in the market so that their rates remain low. And I can tell you that through my discussions for the auditor's office, you know, some of these insurance companies tell me that the judicial environment in Montana is very tough and they're thinking of pulling out, and that becomes a problem.
Well, yeah, we got a couple of cases here called Ridley and Dubray that are kind of difficult for insurance companies to deal with. You know, one thing I was just thinking about, people oftentimes don't really recognize the interplay between insurance companies and how they handle claims and then the premiums. And so a lot of people are like, hey, if there's a claim on an insurance policy, it should be paid. And if the insurance company doesn't pay the claim, that they should be punished and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, that's fine if you're the claimant and it's a legitimate claim, but you go too far in that direction, and then the insurance companies, then they have to raise the premiums on everybody else to pay out what may not be relevant claims. I think that's kind of a something that you're going to need to be paying attention to as the auditor, which I'm sure you are aware of. We're up against the break here. I had one other question for our state auditor-elect, Jim Brown here, but I do want to give him a chance also. I think I've been kind of monopolizing the subject areas here. I want to give him a chance to say what's on his mind, what he's planning. But the last time I had the state auditor, Troy Downing, here in studio, he was on a tour giving educational informative sessions about all of the financial scams and the financial frauds that are happening out there. I have just recently gone through a cybersecurity training, and this is a serious, serious thing, especially for our elderly folks out there that are targeting by these financial scams. I think the auditor's office can make a lot of educational progress on that. We'll talk to Jim Brown about that during the next segment, and then also it looks like we've got a caller on the line. We're taking messages on the Montana Talks app. We've got one segment left here with state auditor elect James Brown, and then we're going to go to John Jackson and David Noble live in studio for the most unwoke hours of the week, 8 to 10. We'll be taking phone calls that entire time, but we'll come back to Jim Brown right after this. David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint.
Fox News commentary.
Vivek Ramaswamy royally ticked off MEGA with his post about foreign workers. I'm Tommy Lahren. More next.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday. Fox Business reporters, anchors, and hosts will bring you beneath the stock market speculation and boardroom drama to tell you about the biggest business stories of today. Whether you're on Main Street or Wall Street, Fox Business is invested in you.
Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Trump ally Vivek Ramaswamy put out a social media post that majorly miffed MAGA supporters. The post is too lengthy to recite, but in essence, Vivek lamented the capabilities and priorities of American workers and our shallow culture as reason for companies hiring foreign workers. He also attacked American television and pop culture icons as detrimental to achievement and homegrown talent. Many in the MAGA social media army did not like this theory. Many are calling on Trump to distance himself from both Elon and Vivek for their defense of an immigrant workforce. Here's my take. We need legal immigration, but we don't need over immigration. We also need to tax remittances for those who make their money here and send it back to their home country. There's a reason we are the number one country in the world and millions flock to here, not away from here. So let it always be America first and America always. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at Outkick.com.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, a look into the Menendez brothers with victims or villains. Then, Judge Jeanine Pirro and a panel of experts break down their new fight for freedom with monsters or misunderstood, and follow three incredible cases where world-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Botten helps change the course of the investigation with the Botten Files. Listen and follow starting January 7th at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Today we'll see some snow showers around, especially early on, and some breaks of sun in some areas later today as well. High temperature readings ranging right around 30. For tonight, partly to mostly cloudy skies, lows from 10 to 15 degrees. And then on Wednesday, we'll see a chance for snow showers, otherwise staying rather cloudy. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Hey, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I'll tell you what, if you're going to be traveling this holiday season, whether it's on a plane, train, or an automobile, download the Montana Talks app. Not only can you listen live through the Montana Talks app, you'll see some of the web content, some of the news and commentary pieces that we share. But if you're traveling, you're in and out of coverage, you're sleeping in, you can download all 4 hours of Montana Talks, and there's going to be some great content. David.
27400 or book online at Open Table.
Brought to you from the Hot Spring Spas and Hot Tub Company, Friends Recommend Studio. This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
I had lined up a couple of subjects there before the break, but this is Montana Talks. And so what we do here is we go to the phones, and we've got Kevin in Billings. Kevin, are you there?
Yes.
All right, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
So I had a question for Mr. Brown. Earlier in your conversation, he said that PSC denied MDU a 10% rate increase, and at the same time he said they lowered the Northwestern rate by 17%. And those were, I thought, awful big numbers. And I was just curious, what were the fundamentals in the reasoning behind those? I mean, were they costs that they couldn't justify, or how did you arrive at those particular numbers? I was just curious.
Yeah, good question. James, did you get that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, thanks for that question. So what happens is the way it works at the PSC is our regulated entities actually come to us and ask for a rate increase. We don't initiate that as a regulatory agency. We rely on the utilities to come, and then we review their filings. So in the case of Northwestern Energy, what happens is that they came in and actually told us that because of market conditions over time, where they procure energy out on the open market, because energy costs had been decreasing related to market purchases, that Northwestern Energies were actually entitled to a rate increase. So that was the basis for that Northwestern decision. Now, MDU came to us and said, no, you know, opposite of what's happening with Northwestern Energy, they were entitled to a rate increase because their costs had been going up. But we have the power under Montana statute to deny what are called interim rate increases or interim rate adjustments until such time as we can fully vet the merits of one of their rate increase filings. And so we looked at their filing and determined that they were not entitled to an interim rate increase, and we did it based on the fact that energy or power bills are increasing at such a substantial rate that it's becoming a hardship for Montana's consumers. Now, that doesn't mean that at some point the commission won't approve our MDU rate increase. We're just not doing it during the winter months when people are really struggling to meet their power bills.
That's a good explanation. So, Jim, before I guess we run out of time here, I'll give you the chance to kind of tell the people in Montana what you want to talk about. Otherwise, I'm curious to kind of, one of the things I thought Troy Downing did a good job on is just the public education on all the financial scams out there, how to spot them, how to avoid them. I'm not sure if you've got any plans on that front.
Yeah, and that's a great place to end this conversation. So I really believe that Commissioner Downing has done an excellent job as an auditor of the state of Montana, and I wish him the best as our Eastern Congressional Congressman. During his tenure, Congressman Downing instituted public education programs where he'd go out into communities in Montana and talk about all the scams that are happening. Unbelievably, I saw a General Accounting Office report that said that there was about $5 billion with the B, in securities fraud across the United States in 2023. And I plan to continue what Commissioner Downing has done in terms of public education and ensuring our seniors, particularly who are particularly vulnerable to AI fraud and online fraud are protected. That's going to be one of the goals of my administration.
That is great to hear, and that's huge, frankly. You know, I've actually got... They're really sophisticated, the scammers out there. I actually almost got scammed recently because I had somebody add me as a friend on a platform, and it was somebody that I thought I'd recognized, and of course, it wasn't. They sent me a link. I clicked on it. I actually noticed it was a scam before I got caught, but I've recently gone through trainings myself, and there's a lot to be learned out there. Montana State Auditor-Elect James Brown, thank you so much for joining us. We're at the end of the hour, 8 o'clock hour. We're going to have John Jackson in the house. We're going to have the most unwoke hours of the week with Mr. John Jackson live here on New Year's Eve 2024. We'll be right back.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Very few of us took economics classes. Perhaps even fewer remember what was said. But we all have a stake in the economy, especially the fight against inflation. And what's been going on in that fight lately isn't exactly how they draw it up on the blackboard. Putting the brakes on the economy when it's running hot is definitely part of the script, of course. That's just what the Fed did when inflation spiked up. Perhaps a bit late, yes. But when it got going, it definitely turned a crank. At the beginning of 24, the Fed said the economy would grow by 1.4% and that the so-called core rate of inflation would slow to 2.4%. And it said they would lower rates three times. So we get to the end of the year and growth looks like it'll come in at 2.8% and inflation up to 2.8% as well. So why did they lower interest rates again? With strong growth and inflation still above target? It doesn't make sense. The Fed is clearly not following the rules and we ought to know why. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.